Actually, it wasn't my idea. Ken made me do it, actually. Is that true? That's not. But what do you think? What I really want to know is whether we're going to be able to get the dye out. What do you think? No, actually, this is kind of cheesy, isn't it? How many people think this is cheesy? Go ahead, raise your hand. I know, I admit it. How many people think this is the sharpest thing you've ever seen? It'll go down in the annals of history here at McLean Bible Church. Yeah, all right. Okay, well, just don't report me to the morning crowd, okay? How's that? Yeah, okay, how about off? All right. Okay. Hey, we're in a series called What Would God Say? And we've done two people so far. The first one was Madonna. That was a good tape. That one you should get. And the second one last week was Joan Osborne. What if God were one of us, just a slob like one of us, right? Next week, we're doing Celine Dion. You don't want to miss that. That's you know the song? And that's going to be a neat message. And we're going to be talking about the love of God. But this week, we're talking about what God would say to our good friend, Dennis Rodman. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could have gotten tattoos and all that good stuff? But nah, I couldn't. Anyway, hey, let's think of some adjectives for Dennis Rodman. All right? Give me an adjective. When you think of Dennis Rodman, this is the adjective that comes to your mind. Vain. Obnoxious. All right? Yeah, go ahead. Flamboyant. Well, that's kind. Yeah. Go ahead.
Outrageous.
Outrageous. That's a good one. Arrogant. Okay. Eccentric? At least. Yeah. Yeah. Strange. Definitely strange. Yeah. Foolish. Okay. Talented. All right. Yeah, the guy's got some talent, doesn't he? Yeah. I mean, all right. Yeah.
Weird.
Okay. That's a good one. In the back. Bizarre. This is good. We ought to write a thesaurus. Y'all know that? This is good. I'm very impressed. All right, one or two more. Yeah. Out of control. How many people think Dennis Rodman's out of control? Yeah. All right, I tend to agree with you. Let's take one more. Go ahead. Confused. Yeah. Well, okay, he probably is. All right, last one over here. What is it?
Insecure.
You think he's insecure with himself? Okay, well, you know, I'm sure he sees a therapist, so we can check it out. Hey, all of those are right. Every one of those are right. But the one that I liked the most was the one that the guy over here had, out of control. I mean, is this an out of control guy or what? I've never seen anybody as out of control as this, except maybe me when I was growing up. But other than that, this guy's the most out of control guy I've ever met. So what would God say to this guy? Well, I want you to turn to a passage in the Bible to see what God would say to this guy. And it's in Proverbs 25. If you didn't bring a Bible tonight, we've got a copy of the Bible you can borrow right on the back of the seat in front of you. And we're going to be on page 467 of our copy of the Bible, or Proverbs 25 in your copy of the Bible. You know what God would say to Dennis Rodman? He would say to Dennis Rodman, Dennis, you are out of control. And because of that, you are an accident just waiting to happen. You are an accident just waiting to happen. Because when you're out of control, self-destruction is always just around the corner. Now look at this verse here in the Bible. It's the very last verse in chapter 25 of the book of Proverbs. And here's what it says. Verse 28. Like a city whose walls are broken down is a man or a woman who lacks self-control. Like a city whose walls are broken down. Now that's an incredible picture. You know, in the ancient Near East, when the Bible was written, when the book of Proverbs was written, every city had a wall around it. Because in those days, there were no smart bombs, there were no, you know, guided missiles, there were no planes, there were no dirigibles. I mean, basically, the only way you could take a city was by land assault. And so the best protection any city had was a wall. And when you were a city and your wall was broken down, man, you were exposed, you were vulnerable, and you were in big trouble. You got the picture? Do you know that ancient Babylon, built by that Nebuchadnezzar fella, remember him? Do you know the walls in that city were 14 miles around, and they were 137 and a half feet thick? This is true. At some points, they were 350 feet high. And Herodotus, the ancient Greek historian, records that these walls were so thick to protect the city of Babylon that you could drive four chariots next to one another around the top of the wall. There was that much room on the top of the wall. Now, why did this guy go to that trouble to build this wall that size? Because in those days, a wall meant what? Safety. A wall meant protection. A wall meant insulation. And so God, using that word picture, says, hey, listen, like a city whose wall is broken down is a person, that's the same way a person is, who has no self-control. You say, hey, Lon, just out of curiosity, how in the world anybody ever take that city? Are you interested in knowing, or should we just go on? You want to know? All right, Cyrus the Persian was the one that took it in 539 BC, and you know how he did it? You never believe it. There was the Euphrates River ran through the middle of the city. That's how they got their water. And so he went upstream and dammed the river and rerouted it and then walked under the wall and into the city. That's how he did it. Nobody's going through 137 feet of wall. So he went under the wall. So that, you know, next time you're playing Trivial Pursuit, you know. Okay, now, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, though. What God is saying here is, look, there's lots of nice people in the world. There's lots of sincere people in the world. There's lots of even talented people in the world, like Dennis Rodman. But the way to turn sincerity and talent and good intentions into the most productive life imaginable, possible for you, is to mix those things with self-control. And when we don't mix them with self-control, it doesn't matter how talented or how nice we may be, we're never going to achieve our full potential. More than that, on the negative end, most of us know of people who are in the ditch today, who have self-destructed and crashed and burned today. We know about it in the media. We can read about it in the Bible. And we have friends who qualify. All of those people who have crashed and burned because of their inability to control some area of their life. How about David? Man, just think how much simpler his life would have been. You know, the dude in the Bible. If he could have controlled what he was feeling for Bathsheba that night. Boy, that would have made life a lot easier. And Moses? Moses would have gotten to see the promised land if he could have controlled his anger. And Samson? Man, he'd still be killing Philistines if he could have controlled his desire for that woman. And we could go through person after person in the Bible, and we could look and see how they self-destructed because of lack of self-control. And we could talk about Pete Rose, and we could talk about Donald Trump and all kinds of other people. But you know what I'm saying is true. And I want to talk to you tonight about some areas where we need as Christians to exercise self-control, and then I want to talk to you about some strategies as to how you and I can do a better job than we do. So I've got four areas to suggest to you where you and I need to work hard at self-control. Here's the first one. Waiting on God. Waiting on God. Psalm 46 verse 10 says this, "Be still and know that I am God." You know what that verse is really saying? It's saying, hey, sometimes is the right time for you to act, and sometimes is the right time just for you to sit still and let me take care of things. But we're not very good at that, are we? See, when we got a problem, when do we want it solved? Now. When we've got a need, when do we want it filled? Right now. When we've got a driving passion and we really want something, when do we want it? Now. When do I want my little red sports car? When? Now. That's right. And I'd have it now if it wasn't for my wife. But anyway, I don't have it. And so what have I got to do? Well, most of the trouble I've gotten myself in life has come for the simple reason that I got way out in front of the time frame that God had in mind for my life. I mean, a lot of times I'm like Moses, right idea, wrong time. I'm good at that. I'm great at that. In fact, that's my spiritual gift, is getting it too soon, being ahead of the curve. You know, and so many times I'll have the right idea, but I'm not willing to wait on God's time to do it. Why? No self-control. No self-control. And I get myself in more trouble that way. Almost all the trouble I've ever gotten into, I got in that way. Here's the second area. How about controlling our appetites? Our earthly human appetites. There's an area where we need some self-control. Titus chapter 2, we saw it in the scripture video this evening, says this: say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and live self-controlled lives. Say no to things that aren't good for you and for me, like donuts. What's your favorite kind of donut? Raise your hand. What's your favorite kind of donut? Yeah. What's your favorite kind? What is it? Chocolate Bavarian cream. Yeah, that is definitely a diet buster right there, man. Okay, what's another one? Who else? Come on now. I know you guys like donuts, yeah.
Double chocolate.
Double chocolate? God bless you. Okay, what else? I like those too. Those are great, yeah. What? Go ahead, what? Powder sugar filled with chocolate Dunkin' Donuts. Very specific donut, but that's good. Okay. Yeah. Raspberry filled chocolate. Chocolate covered raspberry filled. Oh, right. Okay, a couple more. Yeah, in the back. Chocolate eclair. The big long ones. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's two donuts. Yeah, that's a big one. All right, last one. Warren, what's your favorite donut?
Glaze.
Just plain old glaze? Okay, good. You know what my favorite donut is? You'll never guess. All of them. I have never met a donut I don't like. You know what? We come into staff meetings sometime on Tuesdays, and we got donuts left over from parking down at Langley High School on Sunday, and they are hard. You drop them on the floor, and they go clink. You know, I put them in the microwave and eat them. I'll even eat them when they're not in the microwave, if I'm hungry enough. I have never met a donut I didn't like. Now, this is a problem. This is a problem. If you want to live past 50, this is a problem. And so I limit myself to two donuts a day. It's true. I'm telling you the truth. That is the absolute, honest to God truth. Two a day is my limit. You say, do you always reach your limit? That's kind of like fishing. On a good day, yeah. On a good day, yeah, you get to your limit. And this is really a hard struggle for me. I mean, I'll drive by the donut shop, and it's like the car goes on remote control. And I can't stop it. I've tried to stop it. I'll be riding down the road, and I'll psych myself up, and I'll say, all right, now you listen. We're going by the donut shop. We're going home and have toast. No butter, just toast. Just think all the calories we'll save. Toast? Oh, you gotta be kidding. Nobody eats toast. What's some other appetites that we have trouble controlling? Well, you know, some of us have trouble with overspending. Okay. Some of us have trouble. Some of us have trouble with alcohol abuse, substance abuse, tobacco abuse. Some of us have problems controlling our sexual appetites. That's real. Some of us have problems, oversleeping. You know, we say, God, I'm going to get up. I'm going to spend time with you. I promise I'm going to do it. I'm going to set the alarm clock for 5:45, and I'm going to be up. 7:15, we roll over. Ah! Got to get to work. Catch you tomorrow, God. What is this? This is all self-control, folks. This is all it is. And here's the third one. How about our temper? Listen to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 29:22. A hot-tempered person abounds in trouble. A hot-tempered person gets themselves in a lot of trouble. When you can't control your temper, you're going to get yourself in a lot of trouble. I used to live in McLean, and I moved out of McLean. I got some reasons why I moved out of McLean, but I don't want to put them on tape. But anyway, I moved out of McLean. But when I was living in McLean, I lived in this really nice house, and we were laying in bed one night, and Brenda said to me, "Shh, there's something in the attic." And I said, "No, I don't hear anything out of it. There's something up there." "Brenda, you're dreaming. Go to sleep." Well, for the next couple months, she'd say to me, "Lon, there's something in the attic." And I go, "No, you're wrong. There's nothing in the attic. Go to sleep." Finally, I was laying there in bed one night, and I heard this. And I said to Brenda, "There's something in the attic." And she said, "I know." So we had one of these ladders, you know, where you pull it down and it folds down type deal. And I pulled it down real quietly, and I got a flashlight, and I climbed up in the attic real slow. I shined that flashlight, and about 8 feet in front of me was this squirrel sitting right like this, looking right back at me. I tried everything to get this squirrel. I put rat traps up there with peanuts on it. Squirrel would knock the peanut off and set the trap off and then crack the nut and leave all the pieces around the trap just to kind of spite me. This is true. I'd hear the trap go, whack. I'd go running up there and there's just little pieces around as if to say, ha, ha, ha. And oh, I hated the squirrel. I got all kinds of things. I did everything I could think of to get the squirrel out the attic. Could not get the squirrel out the attic. Finally, one day, I decided, I know how I do it. I'm going to do it, because I'd gotten up on the roof to clean the gutters. It was in the fall of the year, and I found out how the squirrel got in. Oh, right behind the gutter, he had chewed a hole right through the wood piece on the back of the gutter, and he was going in and out of that hole. So I got up there with a broom, and I started chasing him around the attic with this broom, making all kinds of noise and making a fool out of myself. And he ran out the hole, and I already had the ladder up, and I already had a piece of metal cut and to fit. And as soon as he ran out, I ran downstairs, ran up the ladder, took a hammer, took some nails, nailed that piece of wire over there, and I said, "Hot dog, I got that squirrel." Well, the next spring, I was out washing the car, about April. And I was in the driveway just having a good old time, and I hear this racket going through the gutter. And I see this little fuzzy ball going through there, and it went right around the side of the house where that hole used to be and disappeared. And I said, nah, it couldn't be. So I said, Brenda, come out here for a second. She came running out, and I said, "You know what? I think that dumb squirrel got back in the house somehow." So I said, "Here's what I want you to do. I'm going to run up in that attic, and I'm going to see if it's the squirrel. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you up in the tree here in the neighbor's yard. And if I go running up there making noise, if the squirrel comes out, I want you to be able to see, because maybe it was a bird or something." So I pushed Brenda up in this tree, about 10 feet up in this tree. This is true. It's in the middle of the day, and I got her jammed way up in this tree. And I went up in the attic, and I started chasing this thing around, and I didn't see it, but I heard it, and all of a sudden I hear Brenda outside yelling, "It's that squirrel! It's that stupid squirrel!" And I don't know what happened. I can't even remember it. It's a blank. But the next thing I knew, I had a shotgun. It's true. I ran downstairs, and I got my shotgun. And I loaded it up with 3 shells. It's a 12-gauge shotgun, the real kind that you shoot things with. And I went running out in the front yard. Now, Brenda's still in the tree. And I said, "Where's the squirrel? Where is he? Where is he?" And she said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Where is that squirrel?" She said, "He's right over there." And he's about 20 feet up in this tree. And I went, "Watch." And I went, boom. The squirrel, meow, bam, hit the ground. Wasn't dead yet. Started running. Boom, boom. And I got that squirrel. Well, this is in the middle of McLean. In the middle of the day. And we had these two old ladies that lived across the street. And they came running out of the house on the front porch, and I heard one of them say, "I don't know, Alma, I think it was a plane." And I'm standing there in our front yard with this shotgun, and all of a sudden it's like reality hit me, and I said, "What did you just do?" Do you know what the penalty must be for shooting a shotgun in McLean? I don't know, but I don't think it's good. So I threw the gun down. I ran behind my house. I hid in the bushes behind my house. Can you imagine the headline? Pastor arrested for discharging weapon in McLean. Not once, three times. I emptied it on this booger.
Please stop your machine and turn the cassette over for the continuation of this tape.
Oh. See what happens when you lose control? I mean, I totally lost it. But you know what? There's some of us who have an anger problem more often than that. And we get ourselves in a lot of trouble. We say things we wish we never would have said. We do things we wish we never would have done. Hey, self-control and anger need to go together. We need to have control over that. One more. How about our words? Our tongue, our mouth. Listen to the book of Proverbs. I got a good one. Proverbs 21:23. The person who guards their mouth and their tongue guards their life from much trouble. That's pretty good. You know, I never regretted anything I didn't say. You ever regret anything you didn't say? But oh, golly. Do I regret some things I did say? Where's Richard Park? I know Richard's here. I'm going to embarrass Richard for a minute. Richard, stand up, second wave at everybody. There's Richard. Y'all know Richard? Everybody know Richard? All right. Richard's been on our staff for how long now, Richard? Almost 14 years, right? And Richard's a great guy, one of my best buddies. I love him to death, but I'll never forget the time Richard walked up to this lady in the foyer and said, "Oh, hello, how are you? When is your baby due?" You have any idea what comes next? And she said, "Richard, I'm not
pregnant."
You got it. How do you feel when you do something like that? Kind of dumb. That's right. I've done things more stupid than that. Like the time I walked in. You remember when we had Matthew Ward here a couple weeks ago? Remember that? I walked in, walked down the aisle. I don't know. I must have had brain freeze. And I walked up to him and I went, "Hey, Michael Card, good to see you." And he looked at me and I thought Kevin Day, I thought he was going to have a heart attack right here in the front of the church. And so Kevin asked me later, he said, "You were kidding, weren't you?" And I went, "Well, yeah, let's assume I was." I was like, "No, how could I do that? Why didn't I just walk up and say, 'It's nice to have you here,' if I didn't know his name?" Hey, how many times have you gotten yourself in trouble with your mouth? Huh? How many times have you said things that you just wish you could grab them and go, I would push them right back in? So are these some areas where we need some self-control? Let's go over them again. First, what? Waiting on God. Second, some human appetites. Third, our anger. And last of all, our mouth. You say, "Well, Lon, give us some practical suggestions about how we can get on top of this." I got four for you. Here they are. Number one, they're not complicated. Number one, talk less. How, that's profound, isn't it? Is that profound? Yeah, it took me all day to think of that. Talk less. The Bible says where words abound, trouble is for sure. Trouble's imminent. And you know, the Bible also says that even a fool, when he keeps his mouth shut, is considered smart. That's my life verse. That is. I figure if I don't say anything, that people will look into me and say, "Oh, that's a pretty wise person." But as soon as I open my mouth, they know how stupid I am. I mean, it's a giveaway. So I have learned over the years to try just to talk less. If you just talk less, the chances of saying something you regret are automatically reduced. Just learn to listen. How can you get in trouble listening? But man, you sure get in trouble talking. Second suggestion I've got is learn the wisdom of cooling off periods. You know, industry has learned this. Haven't they? When there's a union problem or a labor problem, what do they have? They have a what? a cooling off period. Everybody goes to their corner and everybody calms down. And then you come try to come back with cooler heads and with more self-control and talk about it. And folks, we ought to try this as Christians. When you've got a relationship problem with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your fiance or your husband or your wife, man, learn the wisdom of saying, look, this is not the right time for us to talk about it. Why don't we take a little break and maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. We'll talk about it later. Or how about when your boss is giving you a hard way to go? I mean, you're about ready to say something that you're going to really regret because you're about to become unemployed. You don't want to become unemployed unless you've been planning for it. So it's always a good time to say, hey, why don't I just walk away and cool off for a minute? And then I can come back and maybe after I've cooled off, I will talk about this. How about when you go to the store and you see that thing you just gotta have? And the salesperson keeps telling you, you gotta have this. You know what a habit that we developed in our family years ago, and it really works? We never buy anything of any major proportion without going home sleeping on it. Nothing. I don't care how absolutely certain we are when we see it that it's the one we want, we go home and sleep on it anyway. And that's what I tell the salesperson. I go, you know, I really like this. I really want it. You know, I want it so bad I could taste it. But I'm going home and I'm asleep on it and I'll call you tomorrow. Now, see, salespeople don't like you to do that because they know that the best time to sell you something is while they got you right there and when impulse buying is working in their favor. But impulse buying is not working in your favor. It's working against self-control in how you spend your money. And if you'll develop the habit of just cooling off and going home and sleeping on it, it is amazing how when you wake up the next day, you don't want it all that bad anymore. It's incredible how many things I thought I needed and never ended up buying and never ended up really caring about because I went home and slept on it. Try cooling off periods. Here's a third one. Only got two more to go. Focus on the consequences. In other words, think about what it's going to cost you. What it's going to cost you if you do the out of control thing you're thinking about doing. That's how I treat Oreo cookies. Do you know every Oreo cookie has 80 calories? Did you know that? How many people knew Oreo cookies had 80 calories? You didn't know that? No. And you know, 40 of them are in one half and 40 are in another half. When you break them open and eat them, they still got 80 total. Y'all break your Oreos open? How many people break your Oreos open? How many people eat them, just stick the whole thing in your mouth? Oh, gross. Really? All right. Well, I guess it takes all kinds, but you know, double your pleasure, double your fun, break your Oreos in half, man. Trust me, I know. I do this. I eat for a living. Trust me, I know this. Anyway, I try to think, all right, now if I ride the life cycle for 40 minutes at level 11 and 12, I'll burn off about 550 calories. That's 7 Oreos. 14 halves, by the way. And so you know what I do? I get 7 Oreos out and I line them up on the counter. And I say, this is it, man. This is 40 minutes on that killer bike. Sweating to the point that you're soaking wet. Hurting so bad you just want to die. And usually I won't eat them. Usually I won't eat them. But it really does help me to think about what it's going to cost me. Let's take something more serious. I have a good friend who left his wife. And this is a good guy. He owns a major pharmaceuticals corporation out of California. He's a millionaire. He's a fine Christian guy, had a fabulous witness in the pharmaceuticals company that he owned, a fabulous witness in the pharmaceuticals industry across America. And about 3 years ago, we were at a meeting together in New York, and he said, could I go out and during lunch, could we take a walk? And I said, well, sure. So we started taking a walk, and he said, you know, Lon, he said, I need some advice. He said, I've been in these community plays. I've been going down and doing these community plays. He said, and I met this lady doing these community plays. And he said, you know, I really like her. I said, well, you know, it's good to like people. That's good to like people. He said, no, 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 I mean, I like her a lot. I said, well, like how a lot? Well, like a lot, like leaving your wife and having an affair with her a lot? He said, yeah. I said, well, what are you telling me this for? He said, well, I don't know. I just need somebody to talk about with it. You know, I said, it sounds like to me you've already made up your mind what you're going to do. He goes, well, I don't know. Talk me out of it. That's what he said to me. Talk me out of it. How'd you like that assignment? I said to him, I called him by first name, and I said, hey, listen, man, have you thought about what this is going to cost you? I mean, stop now. Have you thought about this? First of all, you got a great wife that you've been married to for 25 years, almost 30 years, who loves you. You're going to damage this woman. You're going to destroy this woman. Then you've got two children who look up to you not only as their father, but as their spiritual example for their whole lives. You're going to totally destroy your relationship with these two children. And then your business. All those employees that you've got in that business, that you've witnessed to, that you've shared Christ with, who've looked to you as a man of God, you know, that's all blown. Look, think of the damage you're going to do to the kingdom of God. They're going to write you off and say, see there, he was just a hypocrite. The whole thing's just a bunch of hypocrisy, like I always thought. And I said, you know, you've got a reputation in the pharmaceutical industry worldwide. And you're on this Christian board with me. They're not going to allow you to stay on the board if you do something like this. I said, I called him by name, and I don't mean this wrong. I said, hey, no woman is worth this price. I don't care who she is. And if it were reversed, no man is worth that price. It's not worth it, man. You got to think through the cost. Well, he did it anyway. Say, Lon, you're a great therapist, man. I can't guarantee success. But what I was telling him, didn't it make sense? And you know, so many times if we would stop early on and just think, what is this going to cost us? A lot of times that'll help us not to do some things that we want to do. Fourth and finally, last thing I'm going to say to you tonight is this. How are we going to have more self-control? Well, we could talk less, and we could learn to practice cooling off periods, and we could learn to think through the consequences before we do stuff, and all of that's really good. But here's the most important thing that I'm going to say to you tonight, and that is it's found in Galatians chapter 5. Would you turn there? It's page 826 in our copy of the Bible. Page 826 in our copy of the Bible, but Galatians chapter 5. And look with me at verse 22, will you? Verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. Look at verse 23. Gentleness and what? Self-control. Dear friends, the Bible tells us that your human nature is stronger than you are. It's stronger than all your good intentions, and we can give it cooling off periods, and we can try to talk less, and we can think through the consequences. But your human nature is still so strong that it'll blow through all three of those defenses sometimes. The only real way, the only true way to begin exercising more self-control in our lives is to let our life come more under the control of the Spirit of God. Because one of the fruits the Spirit of God produces in a life when He is in charge of that life is self-control. It's a supernatural thing. It's a supernatural resource that goes beyond yours and my natural resources. And when we're willing to come to God and say, God, you know the honest truth when it comes to eating? I'm really outmatched, God. When it comes to my temper, I'm really outmatched, God. You know, God, when it comes to oversleeping or when it comes to alcohol or when it comes to sexual drive or whatever it may be, God, I'm really overmatched. When it comes to my mouth.
And Lord, I just need to admit to you that unless you provide the resources to help me control that area of my life, I'm going to lose every time. And so I'm going to trust you to do that for me supernaturally. This works. God says it works. And if you're here tonight and you've never trusted Christ as your real and personal Savior, see, you can do all these other things we've talked about and still lose. Because you don't win just based on some good mechanics like cooling off periods. They help. But the real battle here is spiritual. And we need the power of the Spirit of God in our life if we're going to win this battle. And if you don't know Christ as your personal Savior, you don't have the power of the Spirit of God operating in your life. And one of the benefits you get when you come to Christ, you see, is not just you get eternal life and you get to go to heaven, but you get the Spirit of God living in your life, producing His fruit, one of which is self-control. And I hope you'll think about that. And if you're here tonight and you are a Christian, so many times we go out to fight the battle, but we go out without the greatest ally that we've got, which is the Spirit of God Himself. And if we just would humbly admit our weakness, humbly admit how vulnerable we are and ask God to step in and ask God to control that area of our life, it's amazing the progress that you'll see. You know, I laugh about overeating because I've always had a problem with that. You know, I'm not a therapist and I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I have learned a lot about people over the years and I've learned a lot about myself. And you know why I always overate? I always thought because I was hungry. But you can't eat 8,000-9,000 calories a day because you're hungry. Nobody's that hungry. Now, there's other reasons for eating that much food. And over the years, as I've been able to work back, I've worked back to realize that when I was growing up, there was a huge amount of pain in my life, in my relationship with my parents. My dad was physically absent, emotionally absent. My mother was emotionally abusive. Every Jewish mother is, but mine was. And I grew up with huge amounts of pain in my relationships at home. Well, I didn't know as a young child how to deal with that. No young child knows how to deal with that. They don't even have enough self-awareness to even understand what's happening to them. I just knew I was hurt. And you know, some people drink their pain away. Well, you can't drink your pain away at 10 because they won't sell you liquor. Some people sleep their pain away. I didn't have anybody offering to go to bed with me at 10 years old, be honest with you. Some people smoke their pain away. I learned to eat my pain away. That's how I learned to deal with it. When I'd really feel bad and really feel awful about myself and really be in crisis, man, I'd just go in the kitchen and eat 8,000-10,000 calories. And somehow it made me feel better. It also made me fat. You understand what I'm saying? And I've struggled all my life with that, and I'll never forget about 6 or 8 years ago, we were going to do some life insurance tests. You know, they come in to take the little, you know, doohickey medical exam that they do. And so they hooked me up to this little doohickey blood pressure thing, and it read high, like 130 over 90. And the lady said, well, you know, that's high, you know. And she said, I'll pass you, but that's on the edge. And I thought, well, you know, they come in here to McLean Bible Church. They lay me down on the couch in my office. In the meantime, when I'm laying there on the couch taking my blood pressure, 6 people stick their head in and go, can we get a decision on this? So, of course, my blood pressure's high. So I just wrote it off. You know, I thought, ah. So the next time I went to the doctor a couple months later, I said, hey, take my blood pressure, will you? He took my blood pressure. He said, it's 130 over 90. It's a little high. I went, oh, I'm feeling pretty calm. Maybe I really have a problem. So I said to him, well, you know, my dad died of a heart attack. He had 4. And he said, I know. And he said, you know, Lon, 130 over 90 may not be a huge problem right this moment, but by the time you hit 50 or 60, we got a major problem here. So I said, all right, doc, you know, you've sobered me up. What kind of drugs do I need to take? You know, what kind of medicine do I need to go on? Just give me the pill and I'll be faithful. And he put his arm around my shoulder. I'll never forget it. He looked me right in the eyeballs and he said, son, don't you hate to be called son when you're 40 years old? He said, son, he said, you don't need any medicine. You need to lose 30 pounds. And I started laughing at him. Like that. And he said, don't laugh at me. You need to lose 30 pounds. You're willing to do business with God in some area of your life where you're out of control. And I don't know what that area might be. Maybe for you it's something totally different than it was for me. But whatever issue it is, if you're willing to do business with God and say, God, I'm out of control and I don't know how to bring myself into control, but I'm ready to do business, can you do it for me? I'm telling you, God can do stuff that you can't believe in your life. That's my challenge to you. It'll work if you mean business with God.